Chapter 17 Drones.
Wug!
He was on his back, held to the ground with a force so tenuous he felt as though he floated in water. His head was bent over at a miserable angle, owing to the tank he'd slammed into upon landing, and just took a moment to ask himself how he was. He wiggled various appendages, flexed certain muscles and joints. After several moments of moving gingerly, expecting explosions of terrific pain at any instant, Udo was forced to concede he'd not been permanently damaged.
No more flying, he slurred. No more fucking flying. Udo is henceforward a creature of the fucking land. If there is any god listening right now, be it known that he implores you to strike him dead the next time he considers stepping away from the ground, or else grab him by the ass and pull him inside out for his stupidity.
His voice faded away without answer.
Well, still alive, despite my best efforts otherwise, I guess I should get up now and continue on. Yeah, I'll get right to it.
He closed his eyes and breathed deeply.
Just as soon as I can swallow my heart back.
Another of those diaphanous rings of gray smoke winked into existence directly ahead of his position. It started as a pinprick of bright light against the backdrop of his shuttered eyelids, fading as it tore along an invisible landscape. The ring absorbed into and passed beyond everything it touched, including Udo himself. Eyes still closed, he whispered,
"It's moving through the ground. Somehow it's moving through the rock itself."
Another ring pulsed through him. It felt sharp, brittle, like metal clicking on metal. Udo sighed and pulled himself to a standing position using the tank into which he'd crashed. He looked around until he located the valley center. It was in the direction opposite to where the noise had originated. For a moment, he looked back and forth between these two extremes, using his natural eyes to view the pit encircled within a sea of souls, and the Melam's eyes to see the sounds coming from behind him. It was coming faster now, as if someone was drumming. His hands balled into fists.
God damn it, he hissed. God damn it, god damn it, god damn it, god damn it.
He set off for the source of the sound.
An idiot. That's what you are, a fucking idiot.
It seemed to intensify as he crept nearer. It was strange. When he'd been further away, the emanation of that invisible ring had only been a curiosity. Now it seemed to him like a slavering beast crouched lowly in shadow. He demanded of himself to leave, to turn back and pursue the path he prayed would lead to Geffen.
And then, he whispered, whatever the fuck that is will just be there, behind you. It could just creep right up on you and you'd never know unless you were walking around with your eyes closed.
He snorted, near hysterical with tension.
Right, not as though that isn't how you've always gone about your day.
The next ripple came brighter than ever. Whatever amusement he'd felt died instantly in his heart.
You're just going to look at them, he insisted, just a peek to get a sense of what they are. Maybe they aren't dangerous.
He thought of the watcher and shook his head. Then he crept forward, pressed his body against a tank, and edged right to peer around the side. Three of them. They were shaped like men, well-proportioned arms and legs, torso and head, but moved like insects on all four limbs. Their legs bent unnaturally when they did, hips swiveling so that each appendage stuck out from the pelvis sidewise, the shins pointing straight to the ground like spiders' legs. The arms likewise met the ground in similar fashion, poised upon the tips of two long fingers, and they scuttled around like the crabs he used to see on the shores of Colmar when they weren't standing upright. They wore white masks carved to look like human faces, and their bodies were clad in gleaming silver armor that spanned from the soles of their feet to the crown of their heads. They bustled around a tank, perhaps 3 rutin away. Astonished, Udo stared as one of them skittered to the back and grasped a thick rope that sprouted from the side and plunged straight down into the rock floor. When the creature twisted it, the rope separated from the shell. The woman inside shuddered, and then she, along with the fluid that suspended her, began to sink, slowly at first, then with increasing speed until she disappeared beneath the viewing window. Then the soft blue light illuminating the tank's insides was replaced immediately with something garish and purple. It hurt Udo's eyes, and he winced away from the sight. Something clamped around his ankle suddenly and yanked. Udo had his feet pulled out from under him, bounced along the ground, and his head collided with something hard. For a moment he was blinded by the explosion of bright lights within his own mind. Then, as the darkened underworld faded back into view, he saw a forest of tanks, souls of the damned, rushing by on either side like spars of rock that had grown feet and learned to run. He realized he was panting, out of breath for some reason, and his arms dangling high above his head. His body insisted he was falling yet again, a sensation he'd become adept at ignoring in all but the most extreme of circumstances. He looked down toward his feet. 2 of those creatures had him by the ankles. They were dragging him rapidly away. He twisted his neck around to see what they pulled him away from, saw the pit at the center of the valley receding behind the soul tanks, which shifted into and out of his line of sight when his captors changed direction. A small and distant part of himself realized Udo was screaming. Even as the panic set in, this part of himself, this little kernel of the digger, asserted control and began to struggle. He kicked out and twisted, bucked, snatched up and hurled rocks that bounced harmlessly away from their armored backs. He shouted at and pleaded with them, begged them to stop and talk to him. He tried both threats and reason, and was ignored. Then, perhaps growing angry, he reached out with his good arm and slapped the base of a passing tank, commanding the Melam to hold fast. They jerked to a stop so abruptly that Udo could hear the bones inside his spine strain. He glanced at the hand that had stopped them. The black skin of the Melam was pulling away from his palm, sucking inward like slime and spreading furiously against the metal base. He wondered what would happen if the material tore, or even if it could be torn. Then the 2 creatures turned their flat, white, dead-eyed faces back to stare at him. They looked like dolls, like a rich child's playthings, lifeless, cold, and unfeeling. "Stop that," one of them said. What little of Udo that still functioned noted its mouth did not move when it spoke. He realized it had somehow spoken inside of his mind and screamed. "Stop that," it repeated. The grip around his ankle clamped down until he felt bone grind against bone. Suddenly cold and paralyzed with pain, Udo released the tank automatically. They resumed their bouncing, clunking parade through the field of the dead, dragging a body rigid with shock that panted and swallowed and whimpered, "Oh, gods, please, you're breaking it, you're breaking it. Please, please leave off." The pain in his ankle reduced by a fraction, but the relief was so immediate that Udo gasped. He caromed along the ground, swallowing great lungfuls of air, staring up into the darkness of the cavern as tanks whipped by. He was no longer thinking. Panic had truly set in. Whatever it was that had him, whatever their intent, he was entirely at their mercy. Blinking, rolling wildly, his eyes caught movement. They searched the movement out, grasping for anything they could as his hands wanted to grasp for anything they could. There were more flat, dead-eyed faces staring back at him, peering down from the tops of the passing tanks as if they were spectators observing the condemned hauled off to his execution. Udo was now breathing so rapidly that his vision began to darken around the edges. If he'd known what hyperventilation is, he might have taken steps to control himself. But he did not. The kingdom of hell seemed to grow very small around him. As it receded, he remained fixated on the faces witnessing his passage. They were different from those who had captured him, not perfectly white. There were markings upon the surface of each mask, whorls, sharp angles, and repetitive patterns marked over the bone-white surface in hues of red and blue, sometimes green, sometimes orange. If he'd been himself, Udo would have wondered about that. He would have wondered what it meant. Alas, he was not Udo. He'd been reduced to a quivering half-man who could only observe the things happening around and to him and cower. Then there was a flash of blinding, pearlescent brilliance, and beyond that, nothing. His legs had been released shortly after the flash, but he continued to lie there. He was trying to remember which way they'd been dragging him, hoping to guess the direction toward the valley's center. He blinked several times. He could feel himself doing so, but the act did nothing at all for his vision. He closed his eyes and waited. Many rings of fading gray sound washed through him. It was as if water had died, and he now watched its spirit throw itself against the chambers of the underworld in jealousy of those who yet lived. Thinking this to be a sign of the creatures that had captured him, Udo turned in place until he found the source of all that noise. When he found it, he just watched it a while, not daring to breathe as each new ripple winked into life and rushed toward him like a volley. It seemed to be moving away from him. It seemed to be fading. Then it was gone, and he was blind again. There had been a time in his life when Udo surely would have fallen to hysteria at the loss of his vision. Yet so many of the things he'd lately experienced seemed possible only from within the confines of a madman's dream. This was really just another thing. As well, this was not the first time he'd been blind. He'd awakened blind on Erda's North Mountain once. He was terrified then, wondering how he would find his way back to the world without eyes. But after enough time had passed, his eyes returned.
"What's more, that flash didn't hurt at all," he muttered. "It should have hurt if this was permanent, I think. It didn't even feel like anything, as if hell winked out around me."
The sound rings came again in a low sputter, now faded almost to nothing by the time they reached him.
"They're moving away," he sighed. "Thank you. Thank you, Ing."
He thought about what he should do. Staying put was simultaneously the best and worst choice he could make. It was good in that he could simply wait for his vision to return and avoid becoming more lost than he already was. It was a terrible idea because whatever had grabbed him could certainly come back to this place and grab him again. He wished he knew what had happened. What had caused them to release him in the first place? If it was a trick he could replicate, he wanted to know what that trick was.
"Hey, want and have rarely sleep in the same bed," he said.
He hadn't moved since they let go of his legs. Not really. He'd sat up and twisted around, but his backside was still planted in the scree. His orientation should still be sound. He thought very hard.
"What did you see when they had you? What direction were you heading?"
Udo didn't know. There'd been the tanks whipping by on either side of him, but beyond their soft glow, the cavern had been hidden. And he had not spent a great deal of time looking around. Mostly he was staring at them, their hard, gleaming backs and dead, unfeeling eyes.
"They looked like dolls," he whispered.
And there had been the others atop the tanks as well. He thought they were different from the ones that had taken him. There were drawings upon their masks, much like the markings of Walhazian warriors. And they'd seemed to be hiding, like they wanted to keep out of sight, and the only reason Udo had seen them was because he was flat on his back. He shook his head. None of that information gave him any sense of direction. Best to abandon it for now. He blinked a few times to test his eyes, but could detect no improvement.
Well, let's see, he grunted.
He pushed off the ground with his hands and floated upward. When he judged that he'd drifted high enough, he pulled his legs under himself and found the ground. Now crouching, he felt around until he encountered the hard, cold surface of a tank. He wrapped it with a knuckle, and another of those ghost rings winked to life, rushed out over the ground a few rutin, and dissipated. As it moved, he saw how the leading edge broke around and was absorbed by the other tanks it passed. He struck the tank again, this time harder. The new ring was thicker, bolder. It traveled further, and he saw the footprint of more tanks flash into view, linger, then slowly fade away.
All right, he breathed. You can see your immediate surroundings. That's pretty good. Still no sense of direction, but you can at least keep from running into things.
He decided that choosing the right direction was less important than simply choosing a direction in the first place. After all, he could tell he was deep in the field. He had only to knock upon something solid to see it. For a moment, he wondered if he could beat one of those tanks hard enough to see the boundary of the evil ditches, as Geffen had called them, but decided against making an attempt. He feared he might call something he wished to stay away.
Pick a direction, Udo. You can always adjust later when your eyes return.
He said a prayer to Ing that it would be so. When he was finished, he felt better. Some piece of himself, an inner portion still adorned in the ego with which all men are born and slowly lose in age, believed he would not have been brought to this place simply to be lost, discarded in the field of the dead. He'd been chosen for something. They'd brought him here for some reason. He could not believe that reason ended with him wandering through oblivion forever. For a moment, he wondered if this was what it felt like to have faith. Then he snorted, knocked his fist against a tank, and started walking. At first, he tried not to think about what he was doing, wandering lost through the kingdom of hell, blind, trying to find his way with nothing more than sound. He doubted himself sometimes. Each gray flash that played out in his mind was another suspicion, another bit of evidence his mind had finally cracked. He now entrusted his life to hallucination. Each ring tantalized, rushing away from him like a playful wisp. He wondered if the things he saw were simply his mind scrambling for some sense of rightness, some sense of safety. But then, when the ring broke around the next line of tanks, the leading edge swirled apart in the same repeating pattern. Circle after circle after circle after circle, turning like ink and water. When he reached out with his hand, probing blindly like a lost ancient, it collided with cold, smooth metal. Shrouded behind eyelids, his mind told him that place, where his hand impacted, coincided with the breaking of the smoke ring. He whispered to himself, "If your mind had fractured, if you were hallucinating, hallucination and touch would not agree. No amount of crazy could do that." Udo wished he could strike the ground in such a way that the wave traveled upward into the emptiness of the cavern. He wondered if it would fly far enough to reach the other side. But no matter how he stamped his foot or banged his fist against the tanks or smashed rocks into the ground, the sound would move only through the rock floor.
"It's like a wave moving through the water," he muttered. "It wants that. It wants something to move through, even if that thing is completely solid and shouldn't allow anything to move through it at all."
He did not understand the why of it. The mechanics eluded him. He knew only that there was the thing he could do, like a child, smash things like a lost child, followed by the manner in which the underrealm responded. He felt as though he was again in Talam, tasting small bites of fruit and sitting up through the night, terrified he would fall ill, or else collapse under muscular spasms. The last echo he'd sent out was just fading away when he encountered the next tank, soft press against outstretched fingers, then spreading. Slick, cold surface. Greased, perhaps. He knocked upon it repeatedly, using the clangor to fill his surroundings with motion. The mist within his mind flashed out and struck other things and whipped backwards and forwards like water shuddering upon a drumhead. He looked all about himself as he did this, hoping for some bend in the line of tanks to hint at the center of the funnel. He thought he might have seen something just off to the right. He stared at it, rapping harder as he did. It was hard to see. He couldn't tell if the column bent leftward or if, through some trick of placement, he stood at the intersect of two naturally occurring patterns, a hallucination within a hallucination, a place where the position of each tank conspired to suggest ring patterns spinning off in new directions where there were actually none. He leaned backward and forward, stretched his neck and turned his head and whispered,
"I need to veer right, I think. I think that takes me to the pit."
Udo wondered about that a moment, then shrugged. He could stand there forever just thinking about which way he should go. He could think about it until he starved to death, assuming he could still starve.
"Oh, fine," he sighed. "Let's see what's over here."
He gave the tank a final strike before setting off in the new direction, hands held out like an insect's feelers. He went to the place where he remembered a tank to be, the place his mind told him it should be, but found nothing. For a moment, he stood there, reaching out in all directions. He felt his heart beginning to race when he encountered only emptiness. Udo dropped his hands and took a deep breath.
"Easy," he reminded himself. "Calm. You can still see. You just need... here."
He crouched and probed along the ground until he found a goodly rock to fill the palm of his hand. He beat it against the ground, a high, brittle crack that sent a razor-thin line ripping out over the landscape like a sword swipe. It uncovered the tank for which he'd been searching, several paces to his right.
"Not where you should have been," Udo said.
His sight faded when he dropped the rock and just settled upon his haunches, staring into the blackness where the tank had lately appeared.
"Not right at all," he said, shaking his head.
He beat the ground some more with the rock and found it had not moved. Then he stood and tried to walk toward it. That was when he felt the current. It wasn't a barrier so much. There was a force pushing against him as he walked, nudging into his right side. He felt it. It wasn't a dizzy spell. It was not a loss of equilibrium. There was a tangible force pressing all along the right side of his body, upon his leg, his hip, the side of his trunk, his arm, his face. It was like walking against the flow of a river. He stopped. The force subsided. Then he knelt, found another rock, and beat it against the ground. Again, the place he expected the tank to reside, dead ahead of him, was empty. But there was certainly something off to the right.
"What the fuck?" he whined. "Why? I need to go that way. What the fuck is happening to me?"
He reached in the direction of the tank. It was like pushing through compacted sand. Udo shoved harder and was rewarded only with quivering muscles and a chill ache in his elbow, an ailment that had come to visit perhaps 10 years ago and decided to stay. Then he shifted left and reached out. There was still resistance, though less. It felt as though he could move in this direction if he really leaned into it. He shifted left a bit more, reached. Now there was no resistance at all. Udo rested his arms on his knees and thought a while.
"Something wants you going left where you desire to head right. Now, what do you think about that? Is that something you ought to do? The thing that's pulling you, do you trust it? Is it good for you or bad for you? You've done such a fantastic fucking job of keeping yourself out of trouble. How do you fancy your chances on this one? What odds does Udo make for Udo?"
He tried looking right again. His neck resisted stiffly.
Yeah, he sighed. You know, I think this whole fucking thing is a joke. I think any idea you had about being in control of this is a joke. I think you trying to figure out which way you should go is a fucking joke. I think the conceit that you have any choice at all is a goddamned fucking joke.
Udo stood abruptly and began walking, hands spread wide, head thrown back, directing himself wherever he felt the least resistance. He laughed as he did, softly at first, then harder, forcefully. Soon he was bent double, laughing so hard he could scarcely breathe. He shook his head, shook the fuzz away from his mind. He was laughing too hard, he knew, coughing and hacking from the scratch in his throat, but still laughing. Pulling himself straight, pulling enormous lungfuls of air, and laughing and walking. When the laughter died, it was replaced with belligerence.
How about it? He called. Where shall I go, you fuck? There's clearly a design here, if Udo's to be directed. What? What would you have me do? Here I am. I walk for you now, a fucking puppet. What next? Shall I dance? Sing a song and trot out a fucking caper? Shall I strip naked and fuck whatever manner of beast is brought before me? Tell me, what perversions do you seek? I am here to amuse. I'm here for you, your entertainment. Do you hear me? Can you hear me, you fucking cunt? Answer me. Answer me! What do you want? What? Gah!
He smacked face first into a tank, wringing his brain and knocking his teeth together. An ache bloomed within his head to match the aches of his body and the low, steady pulse of his shoulder. He put his hands against it, realized they were trembling. Then he put his head against the surface as well. It was cold. For whatever reason, a reason he was far past understanding, he could feel the chill through the godskin.
Milam, he whispered. Then he sighed. No more. I can't. I can't anymore. I think this is where I'm going to stop. Just sit down and go to sleep, maybe. Yeah, I could sleep. I'm very tired. Very, very tired.
He rocked his head gently against the tank and felt the coolness of metal against each temple. Then he opened his eyes. He could see again. Udo laughed joylessly. He'd known torments such as this. They were the standard tools of cobble trash. The strongest boys among them well knew its utility. The weak desired to join the gang, but they couldn't simply be let in. They had to be broken first. Run in circles and turned out until they'd dissolved. The gangs used anything to do it, food, shelter or safety, drink, smoke. There were certain powders to be purchased at or stolen from the apothecary, things that could be ground up and mixed into water or wine that would make them feel just incredible for a few hours, make them feel complete, make them forget the misery of the alley. The wet-chilled, teeth-chattering, bone-ached, prodding alley filled with probing blades and buggering fingers. Pour a little of that into them, and they'd do anything you wanted to get more of it. Rob whoever you told them to rob, suck whoever you told them to suck, kill whoever you told them to kill. You'd find them sometimes, huddled up in the trash, starved so thin you could count the ribs down their backs, often naked, rarely older than 8 years of age. After a while, they just gave up and laid over. They'd just find a corner somewhere, curl up into it, and wait. And they rarely had to wait long. Udo used to sneer at them. He'd stumble upon them sometimes, scrounging for food, mostly. Lift up a stack of rubbish, and there one of them would be, huddled and twitching like a dying roach. Prod them, nudge them with your foot all you want, they wouldn't move. scream at them, beat them, shake them until their heads bounced from the cobbles. But they wouldn't move. Maybe they knew something, Udo sighed. Maybe they really knew something. Then he took a deep breath and lifted his head. He looked into the tank. He stared into the eyes of Dithmar, one-time king of Theodiscus. He floated, motionless, lifeless, for all Udo could tell. The digger stared. Then he saw the hand-shaped depression to the right of the window. He watched his hand move toward it.